Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's February 10th, 2012, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Long.
And I'm Mike Faso.
Hey, Mikey! Mikey's back!
It's been so long since I've been on this show that I'm almost ready to play the WSOP Seniors event. I'm not kidding. I'm very close to being able to play that event.
Hey, would you play it?
I am going to play it.
You are going to play it. Awesome.
First year I'm eligible.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You're going to be one of those whippersnappers taking advantage of it.
Yeah, all those old nits. I'm tired of being called an old nit. I'm now going to actually play against some old nits.
Yeah, now they're going to call you whippersnapper.
Yeah. Then you'd be a young nit.
Yep.
Well, it's great to have Mike back on the show. I mean, we've been begging him to come on the show every week forever, and our listeners just have no interest in hearing Faso on the show whatsoever. So, you know, we're just going to stick it to him this week and bring Mike on the show.
Well, you know, we figured, too, that Barry Greenstein's in the news this week, and, you know, he kind of looks like Barry Greenstein.
That's right.
So I thought he could relate. Of course, he looks a lot more like David Sklansky, but we'll leave that for another show when Sklansky gets into trouble.
Oh, perfect segue here to the what I call the too big for the news desk news file.
Yeah.
This week, Barry Greenstein came out, and he was outed as one of the handful of top pros that Group Bernard Tapie says owes Fold Tilt Poker a good chunk of change, depending on who you believe, a total of up to $20 million all told.
From all the players.
All the players.
Right.
Tapie has reportedly reached payback agreements with some of the players and says it's a deal to buy the troubled site. Might fall apart if it can't reach agreements with all the players. Hey, you deadbeats, pay up. Greenstein, of course, immediately drew scores of attention since he's a Poker Stars pro, borrowing money from a rival site. In a Poker News exclusive interview that you can read at PokerNews.com, he said he borrowed the $400,000. Wow. See, I only had $300,000 to give him.
Wow.
Had to go somewhere else. He borrowed the $400,000 before Poker Stars had the really big games that he craved, and Stars was aware he was playing on the site, though not necessarily happy about it. But the real discussion here, I think, guys, and let me kind of highlight some of the stuff that he said in the interview and then hear what you guys say. The real discussion centers on why Barry is reluctant to pay the money back immediately. Here's a couple of things that he said in the interview. One, he hasn't paid the money back because Full Tilt never asked him for it. And he had other debts to repay.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
If I owe you $50 and you're not asking me, I'm not giving it to you.
Trust me, you're never going to owe me $50. He says he'll pay back every dollar, and he has actually rejected a settlement amount with Tapie because he wants to pay it back in full. He's not looking to get out by cheap here. It's just more principle here. He said when Black Friday happened, he knew this was going to become an issue, but didn't want to pay the money back just to have it go to the site's management team instead of the players. He's waiting until there's a player payback pool established by the government before paying it back. And even though he raves about Tapie's lawyer, he's worried about player backlash if he pays the money to Tapie, and then Tapie turns its head to the U.S. players and leaves them holding the bag. So, you know, when I heard all this, it immediately made me think of the movie Independence Day, like everything does. And the John McLaughlin, is President Whitmore's actions A, very, very brave, or B, very, very reckless? Eleanor Cliff, what say you? So here, I mean, I guess my question to you guys are, is Barry Greenstein once again the hero of the people here, or is he putting lipstick pearls and Trist from Britney Spears on a pig here?
It sounds to me like he doesn't want to pay. That's, like, all of these excuses are sound very good, but the bottom line is he is not going to open the wallet until he's good and ready. And I do think he's one of these guys who's a straight shooter. As he said in one of his posts, he's always paid his money back, and he's never gone bad on a debt. But, you know, it's a funny situation, and I think that there's so much money sloshing around in this that we'll never see that I'm not sure that I blame him. I would wait until somebody actually gave him some kind of legal document saying that, you know, you're going to pay this or else before I would open my wallet.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you know, he looks like he has all these reasons to pay, and he's going to pay if he has to, but why give money to a black hole? You know what I mean? If he knows that the money's not going to ever reach the people that beat him out of it or whatever, then why pay it?
Well, I think that's what's the most interesting part of this is that that's a good argument on his part. He's, you know, hey, if I pay this money, I don't know where it's going to go. And it's different, but we have all these players out there that are owed money by Full Tilt, right? Hmm. And we all saw exactly what happened when you screw them. I mean, Howard Leonard and Chris Ferguson can't walk anywhere in the world right now without getting beat up from the player backlash. So, not that Barry is in that same class, but I'll give a point here for saying, you know, hey, if I give this money back and then it turns out it doesn't go to the players, are the players going to take all that lynch mob venom that they've been putting on these other people on me?
Well, the other thing is that at some point people are going to have to come to the realization that a lot of this money is just never going to be – you're never going to be made good, I think. Look at what happened in the U.S. economy, which was basically a legitimate business, although it was done as a Ponzi scheme in many aspects. And people lost billions of dollars on houses and mortgages. This is poker. I mean, if you think that going in – I never had more than about $400 on Full Tilt, not that I played high anyway. But a couple times when I hit a big score in a multi-table tournament, the very next day I pulled that money out of there. I mean, I had no illusions about the fact that this is a very shady business, unregulated. At some point, people are just going to have to take a loss, I think.
And I think that speaks volumes about what people are going to do in the future when poker is finally regulated. Even though it's regulated and everything, I think people are going to be very cautious with their money and not put so much online, even if it is regulated now. I think they're all going to be a little scared, and they might start pulling money off, and you might have a lot of rat holers, and, you know, I wonder if that's going to happen. But, I mean, get back to Barry. I feel like Barry has always been on the up and up on the level, and I think if he, in a very public way, paid the money back, even before they had not a settlement, but a way of distributing it to everyone, I think that he wouldn't get the backlash that you're talking about, because there's a difference when you look at what Chris is doing. You know, he's fighting for every dime that he can get, you know, in a time when everyone is looking for their money back, and he's like, I'm still owed $8 trillion, you know. And so obviously you're going to get people ticked off at you, and, you know, and the same with Lederer. I mean, we haven't heard one word from Lederer, so we don't know what's going on there. But with Barry, I think all these are legitimate reasons. I mean, the one where it says they haven't asked him for it is kind of funny. I mean, really, you know you owe money to somebody, so if I'm not going to keep avoiding Faso because they borrowed money from
another. It's not as if he got the third notice in the mail and kept throwing in the trash.
Right,
I mean,
right.
If you got six bills in front of you and five of them people are hounding you on, which ones are you going to pay back? And not the sixth one that they're just saying, oh, hey, pay it back when you can. So.
Right. Right. Well, the other thing, though, is he is being asked for it now, obviously, because it came out that they said that
absolutely.
He owes money. So,
exactly. That's what that's kind of the bigger point here, I think, is now it's out, and should he pay it back right away? Another part that I thought was interesting is this is one more of these things that I think the inconvenience of Black Friday, I like to call it. I mean, other people would probably use much bigger words. But, you know, it was one of my contentions, and I'm fairly alone in this among our listeners, I think, that if Black Friday hadn't happened, that Full Tilt might have found a way out of this mess, got their finances in order, be able to, you know, pay people back and figure out all the problems they had. But Black Friday came and the House of Cards came down. And this is the same thing, I think I do. I mean, I got to imagine Barry Greenstein that day when Black Friday happens, all the thoughts are going through his head. You know, one, you know, what's going to happen to my PokerStars contract? Two, what's going to happen to my money on PokerStars? And, oh, yeah, by the way, now people are going to find out that I owe $400,000 to Full Tilt that I haven't paid back.
You know, you make a good point. I don't know if a lot of people would totally disagree with that point when you said that they might be able to write their shit, because didn't even the court of law kind of say that with that lawsuit where those guys are trying to sue him for the money, and they were like sort of saying, hey, if Black Friday hadn't happened, we don't know what would have happened to that money, so you can't blame Full Tilt for the whole Black Friday thing? Or
well, I mean, what that said is we just don't know. And I don't know either. I don't
right.
think anybody knows. I mean, the question is, I mean, there are a lot of people out there that think that Full Tilt was just evil and was going to continue fleecing people until the House of Cards came down on its own, where I'm not willing to go that extra step, and I think it's possible to say that they were just running a poorly run company and could get themselves out if they wanted to.
But the thing is, though, that Black Friday did happen, and the other poker site did make good on all the money that it owed the players. So,
sure.
I mean, if you held them to the same standard, then I'm not sure that if Black Friday had never happened, I think you probably would have seen Full Tilt become even more corrupt, and because it was a wake-up call, and when the wake-up call came, PokerStars was able to make it right, and Full Tilt wasn't. So I think that shows that it's a very poorly run company. I mean, it's almost if it's a Madoff type situation when you look at it.
Don't start getting to that P word. all right, one last. I'm curious what you guys think. To me, when I'm to post and then the Poker News interview, part of me in the back of my head, the businessman in me, was like, this guy is... He hired the Tylenol public relations disaster team to help him out here. And I think with what he's saying is he got himself out in front of the issue. He wasn't out in front, obviously, back in April when he probably should have been. But he's out in front now, where no one, none of these other players are, as far as I can tell. And you know, whether you buy it or not, he's making some points that I think are winning some style points with players. That, you know, hey, I'm here. Hey, I got the money. I'm ready to sign it over. I just want to be sure it's going to go to the U.S. players. I think he's kind of backing these other players into a wall, or the quarter. I mean, aren't they? Isn't he? I mean, what are these other people going to say if they don't come out and say the same thing?
That's a good point. I mean, that's the thing is, yeah, he's proving, because I think if you went to the big game at the Bellagio or whatever, you would see that he has the money. I mean, it's not like he doesn't have the money. I think that he can easily pay this debt off. So he's doing this intentionally. I mean, I think he's doing it to try to bring people out. I mean, I don't think he's just doing it just to defend himself. I think he is trying to. I always think of him as, like, you know, they call him the Robin Hood of poker because he used to donate all of his money to charity and everything when he won a tournament. So maybe he's trying to do that again in this sort of way of doing it, not making himself a guinea pig, but coming out and saying the way he did. I mean, these are all very legitimate reasons to not pay that money yet. Maybe he is getting other people to try to come out and say, hey, I'm going to do the same thing, or that's the reason I'm not paying them, or whatever. So it's a good point. I think he might be doing that.
I think if they were going to come out from the Tapee people and make an issue of it, I think getting out in front of it is a good idea. But it sounds to me like he initiated this release of information, and I would never do that. I would keep my mouth clamped shut until absolutely necessary, like all the rest of the players are doing.
But that's what I'm saying. I mean, isn't he kind of forcing their hand by saying, you know, hey, I'm not a deadbeat. I want to pay this back. I just want to make sure it's going to the players. Once I'm convinced it's going back to the players, then here's your check.
He's obviously a good guy, but I'm not sure that by doing that you're going to turn a poker pro who's a real sleaze into a good guy.
But you're going to make yourself less sleazy, I think, aren't you?
No,
if he clammed up like you said, and then this thing got escalated and got more serious, then I think it would be harder to do the damage control at that point, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, the preemptive damage control, I guess you'll never know how it would have worked if you kept your mouth shut, but I always think the best policy is keeping your mouth shut. in all cases.
Oh, boy. Can you counsel Chris on that?
Very funny. Here's my imitation of myself earlier this week. Ready? That was me earlier this week because I couldn't talk. I was so sick. And I thought, hey, I want to see Scott do a whole show with me not talking. So I'm just going to sit here and let you guys talk now. Go ahead.
Hey, I don't know if I was going to do it. I can play both sides. He's probably not going to like my my impression of him, but I can do it.
Just remember that I could do it too. And you would not like my impression of you.
All right, let's not get crazy here. Just move on the hotline before you you actually do an impression of me.
The phone number is 813-448-1120. And a reminder, too, when you call, let's try to stick in the minute time frame. You know, minute to win it. You want to win the swag, you know, kind of thing. Because, you know, people are calling and leaving like 2-3 messages, and eventually we're just not going to use them. If it's going to be that long, then we have Annie Up. You know, you can mail us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com and explain all your thoughts. But you know, calling us up drunk and leaving 5 or 6 messages, and it's difficult for us to put it on the show. So
we
just a reminder.
Make fun of Faso when he's on the show.
So this comes from Brian in Jersey.
I wanted to tell a quick story about the most ridiculous thing that ever happened to me at a poker game. I'm not even in the hand. A guy right next to me posts, and there's a raise preflop, 6 ways to the flop. He calls the raise, and I realize he's clearly drunk and loud. The action goes before him. He checks. The action is raise, re-raise, and a flat. He looks at his hand and says, "Oh, my God, what do I do?" He slides his cards over to me and says, "What would you do here?" I look down. I actually look at his hand. He has 7 deuce. The board is 9-8-8. He says, "What would you do? Go ahead." I throw his hand into the muck, and he jumps out of his chair. Screams, "Oh my God, floor." Screams for the floor. The floor is called. And you'd act like I just folded like some terrific hand, like, you know, aces, something else, maybe a 9 or an 8. But he claims I folded his pocket 9s. And clearly he had 7 deuce. We both laughed. I threw it in the muck. He jumps up. Floor actually comes over. 2 security guards arrive too. And the floor is trying to decide what to do. I'm about to be thrown out of my favorite poker room. And I don't believe what's happening. Anyway, the floor finally makes a ruling after about 5 minutes of craziness, and they say, "Don't do it again." I swear to God, this guy freaked me out. I explained that to the floor. Anyway, both of the players ended up having an 8. He was just being a complete idiot.
I absolutely love this clip.
Wow.
I mean, who of us did not ever want to do this to some jack-off next to us? Showing us the cards and just want to go, "You know what? I would muck them and pick them up and muck them." It's kind of like this inside voice kind of thing that I would, you know, you see those movies where you have like, "Oh my God, did he just do that?" And then they go back and, okay, he's dreaming. But no, Brian actually did it. You got to love these Jersey guys, you know? Yeah,
hats off, man. Grab those cards and throw them in the muck for him. Of course, the guy goes ape on him.
Oh, I would too. I mean, if somebody touched my cards and threw them in the muck, sure, I would love to. That's cool. Why not? But again, I wouldn't be the one, you know, showing somebody my cards either. So,
well, Mike, you're known for taking cards and throwing them. What do you think about this?
I threw my own cards.
Yeah, it's
not
true.
Someone else's.
That's true.
It's a big difference there.
I fired him into the forehead of a dealer. Remember that, Scott?
Derby Lane, right?
I will never forget that. Neither will he. I mean, I think that ace of spades is still in his head.
And that's when the floor came over and said, "We don't do that here." And I said, "Okay."
He just said, "Now, where do we do that?"
Yeah, the home game.
I want to play there.
Not only don't I touch other people's cards, I don't even talk to other people or look at other people or, you know, have any kind of contact. I played for like 12 hours last week at Derby Lane. I think I said 3 words the whole 12 hours. And the reason is that I'm observing the people. I don't want to get involved with them. I mean, there was a guy sitting next to me who wanted to talk about how he had to go to New Jersey to bail out his daughter from jail. And I really wasn't interested. I'm sorry. I'm not there to – it's not the Oprah show, folks.
Maybe Brian knew her.
Brian, you can ask whether the daughter was cute, at least.
Brian's from Jersey. Maybe Brian.
He showed me her picture on his phone, saying she has kind of cute.
Yeah, well, but see. Changes the discussion a little bit.
The first thing I do if a drunk sits next to me is, depending on what side he's on, I mean, if he's on the correct side, then that's good. But otherwise, I'll ask for a seat change. And, you know, I just avoid that kind of stuff. To me, poker's not a social game. I know that sounds crazy. But when we're playing in our game, yes. But in the public game, no. Total stone face.
I would never have touched the cards, though, if I was Brian. I mean, I would never, you know, guys, never what would you do? Just ignore the guy or say, you know what, your hand, one player to a hand or whatever. And then, you know what else, too, though? So the dealer should have stopped at that point, too, and said, hey, you know, don't show your cards to another player or whatever. So not faulting the dealer, but, you know.
People have to be kicked off the table because I remember one time at the Silts, it was Derby Day. And there was a guy who was blind drunk at the table. And you know how they have these massage people who come around, right? So he decides he wants a massage. So he's at the table. He's kind of a hefty 60-ish guy, probably a B cup, I'm guessing. And so he asked for the massage. He's just totally – he's in that drunk kind of state where he's almost too quiet because he's so drunk. He's almost ready to go comatose. And when the massage girl comes by, he takes off his shirt.
Oh, my God.
Massage.
Awesome.
Oh, my God.
And at that point, someone came over from the floor and said, "We don't do that here."
Immediately, a huge black bar went over the guy's breasts.
You got it. Flaunted. All right, Brian, we appreciate you calling the hotline again. Our area, that number is 813-448-1120. And there's a one-minute time limit, lady. And if you call and we use it, we will give you something off our great swag shelf. Like Brian's going to win this week a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for the Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner to enjoy the great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store.
Hey, we got a mailbag, too. Wow, we're hitting on all cylinders today. I actually wrote back to Drew. I don't know if you did, but a guy named Drew asks us, "Do you feel obligated to inform a player on either side of you in live play when they consistently fail to protect their hand? You know, when you can see their hole cards. Do you think it's wrong to
now you
use...
pick them up and throw them in the muck?"
He says, "Do you think it's wrong to use that information to win pots off of them? Does your answer change depending on who the person failing to protect their hand is, like a sweet little old lady or a brash young college kid? And what if the casino caught you? Is there a penalty?"
I do feel obligated to let someone know that I can see their hand. And actually, this happened to me when I was playing with Faso out in Vegas a couple years ago at the Paris. Actually, I was the one apparently exposing my hand intentionally. And the guy next to me just kind of whispered, he's like, "Hey, man, I don't want to make a big deal of this, but, you know, I can see your cards, so just protect them a little better." And I thought it was the coolest thing ever. I mean, it's one of those things like when someone tells you that you got spinach in your teeth. I mean, you're terribly embarrassed, obviously, but at the same time, you're happy that someone told you before it, you know,
before you go to that business meeting.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of the same thing. So, I mean, I always thought that was very... generous of him, because I don't think he had to tell me that. He certainly could have used it to his advantage. So, no, I guess obligated is a strong word. I mean, obviously, you're obligated to protect your own hand is the obligation here.
Right.
But I think from a gentleman's poker perspective that, you know, you might just want to mention that to someone that, you know, maybe they're not aware that they're picking their cards up too much. I don't know.
I know that Faso tells people, because I've seen him do it in our home game a few times to newbies and stuff, saying, "Hey, I'm going to protect your hand, I can see it." And I do too. I always give them a warning. I tell them first, I said, "Look, I can see your cards, and I'm not looking to see your cards, but I'm watching the action go around the table, and then your eye automatically drifts over to what this guy's going to do by watching their hands and stuff, and you see the cards." So I say to them, "Look, I can see your cards. I'm telling you now, protect your hand, because I can't promise I'm not going to see him again. I'm not going to do something different, change my way of doing things, because you can show me your cards." So, and then after that, you know, they've been warned. And if they're showing your cards and you know the guy's got the ace of spades and there's four spades on the board, you know, what are you going to do? Keep calling because I wasn't supposed to see the ace of spades? No, you're going to use that information. So you know, you did your job, and they're not doing theirs, so... and then he also asks, too, what if the casino caught you? Is there a penalty? There's no way. There's nothing wrong with looking wherever you want to look. If somebody's not protecting their cards, it's their fault, not yours. You didn't do anything
unless you go under the table.
Yeah, exactly.
unless they're using those glass things. Unless you're playing a client, he just picks the cards up and looks at them.
I wish people would stop showing me their cards. I hate that when you're in one of those games.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
And everybody, like... fans their cards out in front of you and shows you, and then you have to look at the board and look at their cards, and then you have to shrug. And I mean, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to see what's a tough decision they have, and then you're supposed to commiserate with them. Just throw them away. I don't care.
You know what's funny is I think that if we actually did what we really wanted to do, we would probably cure people of all of these ailments. You know, if some idiot shows you the cards and they got like the nuts, you're like, oh my God, that's the best hand ever. You better bet with that. You know, he'll never do that again.
Yeah. I don't know. I think what I would do is if somebody did that, I'm like, oh my gosh, I had the same hand, the exact same suits. And really messed up the game and get him in trouble. But I mean, I guess the other thing too is, do you think it's wrong to use this information? How is that wrong? I mean, I'm supposed to reduce my expected value now because I know you have a card, and I'm not supposed to exploit that?
Well, that's the thing. If you see that somebody has you beat, and you would have normally either called or continued in the hand in some way, and you fold, that's how can that even be? That can't be morally wrong in any sense of the word. I mean... You can't be expected to hurt yourself because of something you've seen that they've done wrong.
Exactly.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
I mean, that's why when they expose a card, they show everybody at the table that this card is being exposed because someone else has that information. Now, that's the other thing. You don't, you know, you're not supposed to lean over to the next guy and go, hey, guess what? The guy in C3's got the ace of clubs, you know?
it's a little bit more of a tougher call when, let's say you see someone's cards and they're betting into you and you know that you have them beat. And you can, in a situation where you may just have called, you decide you want to raise now to value bet your hand. And, you know, that way you're extracting more money out of them based on the situation. So that's a little bit different, but I would still do that.
Yeah, I would too, because then what if you – how do you do it? You just call?
Yeah.
You know, and then you say to the guy, hey, I knew what your hand is, so I'm just – you know, I'm telling you right now, don't call my bet here, and then he's not going to believe you, you know?
It's just turn all the cards up.
Yeah,
and play.
Exactly.
All right, then he also asks, does it matter who it is, a sweet old lady or a brash young college kid? And I guess to that question I'll say, no, it doesn't matter on the first warning, but it definitely matters to me on the second warning.
If it's a brash young college kid, I'll give him a break. If it's a little old lady, I'm going to fleece her out of her life.
Oh, man.
All right, well, he also asked an unrelated random question, which I was very intrigued by. I couldn't really get an answer for it, but I did find some interesting stuff when I researched it. And I'm real curious whether Fasto knows this, since he was around when stud was invented. Why is it called a door card in stud, but a window card in hold'em?
Well, the window card in hold'em, isn't that the first card you see when they start to spread the flop?
Exactly. You see it. It's the first thing
right
you see.
Right in the window.
Yeah, it's
right? That's
the
first card, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and what was interesting is I looked for an answer to this. I couldn't really find anything. Of course, I did find something on Wikipedia, which, of course, is always right, right?
Yeah.
But what I thought was, it cracked me up, is that it uses these terms interchangeably.
Huh.
So when you go to the door card under D, the door card, it's also called a window card. And you go to window card, also called a door card.
It's
so maybe
like...
they are just interchangeable. It's just over the course of time, more kids are playing hold'em, and they prefer windows to doors because, you know, they're more open.
You know, I don't know anything about this, but it would seem to me that the reason... and this could be a reason that would be called a door card, is because, first of all, the low card or high card, depending on your game, it brings it in, and you bring it in through the door. That's the door card.
I can bring stuff into a window, though, right?
Yeah, well.
Well, everyone has a door card, though, and you're not just a bring-in guy, isn't just a door card. So
yeah, that's true.
Well, I think of it as it's the door to the house. Like, in other words, you have two cards that are the foundation of what your hand is going to be at the end, and the door is sort of the way to get into those cards. I don't
know. Yeah, that's true.
I have no idea why they call it door cards.
All right, Drew, we appreciate you mailing us your question for the mailbag. Everybody else, email it to podcast@annieupmagazine.com, and we'll send you something great, like we're going to send Drew a deck of J-Design playing cards, official playing cards of Annie Up. You can pick up your own decks in the Annie Up store at annieupstore.com, and they now come with both door cards and window cards. And they're always innovating there at J-Design.
I think you need to read the call to the floor, because I'm going to start hacking pretty soon.
All right, here comes our call to the floor. It comes from Andy Castro. And he says he was in a cash game down in the South Florida poker room when two players get it all in on the turn. The river comes, and the first player turns over pocket fours for a flop set of fours. The other player stands up, and with a big up-and-down motion of his right hand, throws his two cards on the table, showing pocket eights for a flop set of eights. Several players on his side of the table saw the two cards before one of the cards bounced off the table onto the floor. See, he's got terrible aim. Fasa would never miss the dealer. The dealer immediately called his hand dead. A big commotion started. The guy became very upset, and everyone on his side of the table was agreeing with him that his hand should not be dead because he threw the cards down face up, and they had seen what the cards were. The floor was called. The guy with the set of fours who had been declared the winner wanted the other guy to be given the pot. See, who says poker players aren't fair? Question number one. The manager agreed with the dealer that once the player's card bounced off the table and onto the floor, his hand was dead. Was this the right decision? Question two, despite the public plea by the player declared the winner that the pot be awarded to the other player, the manager forced him to take the pot and told him that he was prohibited from passing the chips to the losing player. Was this correct? If the declared winner wants the poker room to award the pot to another player, why not let him? I like the ultimate solution that the floor manager came up with. He told the declared winner they could give the losing player the money and cash away from the table should he choose to, which the guy did, which really impressed me.
Wow.
All right, here's what Jody said. It is unclear to me whether both cards hit the table face up before bouncing off. If they did, the hand is live and everything is fine. Give the set of eights the pot. From reading the explanation, it seems though one card wasn't actually tabled correctly, leaving it certain in everybody's mind what the hand was. In this case, I agree with the dealer or the manager. The situation would not occur if players would simply table the cards and protect their rights to the pot. If you really want to win the pot, you should ensure your hand doesn't fly off the table. Situations like this are caused by a rowdy player, but the end result is the room staff have to be the bad guys in front of everyone. Consider this. Three other players see the two eights. One is the guy's roommate, one is his brother, one is his best friend. Can you really rely on their claims of what the card is? As far as players exchanging the money, I totally agree with how this was handled. A lot of floor decisions in poker have to do with protecting the players at the table who don't want to say anything and look like the bad guy. It is the floor person's responsibility to do what's best for the game. In this situation, several players may have wanted the pot push the guy with the alleged eights, but there was at least one player that wanted the player with the fours to receive the pot, either on principle or because of his position on that player and perceived superior playing skills to that player versus the player with the alleged eights.
So, here's the deal. Was one eight face up, and the other one was a card off table? They didn't know what it was.
We don't really know. I mean, his email said that he threw his cards down face up. It's just a matter of how long that second one was face up, and whether everybody at the table saw it before it skidded off the table.
So then, when they pick up the card off the floor and it is an eight, does that not prove that it was eights? I never really understood this whole rule.
My little naive co-host here. Let's say that I've got a couple aces in my jean pocket.
Uh-huh.
And you throw your card off the table, and whoo, I drop it on the ground and pick up the other one. And then we pick it up. Oh, it proves it. Chris Cosenza said so.
So, okay, so they're not going to take that eight and put it right back in the deck and shuffle it and use that deck in the next hand? And count the cards, the 52 cards?
We're going to count down the deck.
So then count down the deck. It proves that the 8 is in the deck, and the deck is fine. I mean, it took so long to get the floor to come over and check it. Wouldn't it take this as long to count the deck down when they get the floor over there and say, look, it is the 8?
Let's start from the beginning. The floor does have to come over.
Right, right. That's what I'm saying, though. The floor comes over, count the deck down.
We count down the deck. But, yeah. But here's the ultimate thing I take out of this, and Jody's right. Just quit being a jerk at the table.
Exactly.
Seriously, if people just quit being jerks at the table, it would probably put Jody out of business. wouldn't it?
when I heard you say that the other player stands up and with a big up and down motion of his right hand throws it, I could just picture that. I have seen that so many times.
Every single time we play.
The big production number where you stand up and you put your hands up and you fling the card. I mean, it's ridiculous. First of all, I like to sit next to the dealer on either side. So whenever I'm called, I immediately just flip my cards over and then keep my hand on them because you can obviously get your cards mistakenly mucked.
But yeah, Brian's sitting next to you.
Yeah. But it's really just you're going to always have jerks at the table. And but as far as when cards bounce off the table, I think Chris is right. I mean, in a normal situation, when like a dealer throws a card and it goes off the table by mistake, the player just goes down, picks it up, and puts it back on the table, and they just continue dealing or reshuffle or whatever the situation may be. I mean, it's not a question.
I don't think I've always seen that. I think usually maybe they'll take that card and muck it and give them a new card, maybe.
Yeah, they'll give them a new card.
But what he's saying is we're not taking that setup out of play. They're going to keep using that card. So if that's a card that's legitimately, you use the excuse that guy had pocket aces from that exact setup in his sleeve and then went down and picked them up and used them. And I mean, it's just kind of silly.
Well, yeah, but I mean, then you're also assuming that they're actually going to count down the deck and think about it. I mean,
well, once it goes into
you can see the situation where the guy picks it up and the orc goes, oh, he had aces. All right, great. Push the pot. And then five hands later, there's seven aces of spades in the deck. And then you never know when it happened.
But the automatic shuffler is going to detect an extra card if it's one of those tables.
Yeah, if you're in one of those tables. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think whenever a card goes
but
off
that's
the table,
gonna be after the
it
pot's
should be counted down
too,
anyway.
You know?
Yeah.
If a card goes off the table, that the deck should be counted
well,
down.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just what I'm saying is that there are poker rooms and dealers that would not go to that step.
And that's it's true, though, that you can't let people pay other people off from the table because
yes.
That opens all kinds of collusion issues.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we saw that in Rounders. You know, Worm sat down and wanted to take some Mike's chips after, you know, he had the relaxation therapist and was told he wouldn't and caused a big hullabaloo. And I'm sure later on at that session, he picked his cards up with a big up and down motion and threw them down the table. That's just the kind of guy Worm was.
We got a hanger, Sarge.
No, but seriously, just quit being a jerk at the table. Can we just agree on that?
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you're going to be a jerk, you take the risk of losing a pot that you should have won.
Yeah.
So, Chris, is this getting through to you?
Yeah. Yeah, I know how I'm constantly doing cartwheels in the home game.
All right. So, Andy, obviously, even with our new, more generous swag policy, you do not qualify today. But everybody else, email your call the floor questions to us, podcast@andy@magazine.com. And we might give you something great, like a t-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Andy App Store at andyappstore.com.
You remember when we started talking about that there were like 847 billion events now for bracelets at the World Series? So
no, I totally forgot last week's show already.
Yeah, it was last week's show, and Jay Herkey writes in about that little comment, and he says, if having larger number of bracelets waters it down, then winning a gold medal at the Olympics must mean crap with the amount that are out there. So we had a little back and forth a little bit about this, and I know what he's trying to say there, but really it's apples and oranges, people, apples and oranges. You know, if you're a great boxer, and you're 240 pounds, you can't enter the flyweight division and win, and enter the middleweight division and win, and enter the bantamweight division and win. No, you have to enter your division. In poker, you can weigh as much as Faso, or you can weigh as much as me, and you can still enter every single event if you want. It's not the same thing. It's totally watered down when you have 60 events, and everybody can enter every single one, versus, you know, somebody who's great at being in a biathlon and in the winter and then trying to play tennis in the summer. I mean, it's not the same thing. They're not watered down to me.
I'm not going to disagree with you, but I also think it would be interesting to go back and count from the first World Series of Poker bracelet given out how many Olympic medals have been given out in the same time period.
Right. Well, then the other thing I said to him, too, was, are you going to pay... You know, give somebody a silver bracelet for coming in second and a bronze for coming in third.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, of course.
Let's make everybody happy.
Would that water
it
down then?
Participation ribbons for everybody else.
Is that enough to water it down?
I have a little bit different take on this because I actually think the bracelets are worth more now than they were.
Really?
When there were fewer of them. When you look back to the beginnings of the World Series, in some cases you have what amounts to a three-table sit-and-go,
yeah,
resulting in a bracelet.
Right.
So I think the fact that somebody has to make their way through 4,000 players in a Donkamon or something is a much bigger achievement than somebody sitting down with 30 players in 1973 and winning a bracelet in lowball or something.
But is it, though? But is it, though, really? I mean, let's face it. If you're
Yes, it is. I just said it was.
I don't think it is, Mike. I think that it's has a lot to do with luck when you survive 4,000 people. Whereas if you're playing 30 of the best players in the world, the only guys who could afford to actually play in the event when they didn't have satellites and guys luck boxing into a seat online, that you had a quality amount of people playing 30 players.
I think the quality of poker is that's played at the highest level is higher now than it was then. So, and then as you know, winding your way through a field, obviously there's going to be some luck involved, but I don't think that the And how many medals or bracelets are there? Like 45 or something this year?
61.
Really?
Yeah. See, now you change your mind, don't you? Now it's watered down, isn't it?
Well, my point still stands that winning a three-table sit-and-go is easier than winning a 4,000-player event, and I'll stand by that.
Okay. But anyway, I just don't think comparing it to the Olympics is – I just don't think that's the same thing. The Olympics are once every 4 years – and they're different disciplines and different classes that you just can't qualify for or you have to be talented in. It's totally different. How many people do you know won an Olympic bracelet and Olympic gold medal? And how many people do you know?
I don't know anybody that won an Olympic bracelet.
Oh, they're giving those out this year in London. Did you know that?
No, but yeah. And the only reason I know people that won poker bracelets is because I own a poker magazine. So.
It's harder to win a banana than it is to win.
See, that's true.
It's OP.
Because there are fewer bananas. And now with no online poker, I mean, they might become a relic.
But anybody could win a curling medal. Look at that. Seriously, I watched some of those people, and I'm like, that could be me. If we had ice down here in Florida. All right, we're moving on to our little bit of housekeeping here before we get on the news desk. New swag! Pro Poker Gear, which makes terrific bracelets for your home games, as well as shirts, hats, and more, becomes a new swag provider this week. You can check out their stuff in the AnyUp store at AnyUpStore.com. And if we use your submission on the air, Poker Pro Gear will be sending you one of their grinder bracelets. Trying to find new stuff to give you guys this year.
Very cool. Don't forget to check out our 2012 Poker Crew schedule, AnyUpMagazine.com/cruise. Three great cruises, March 17th out of Tampa, August 27th out of Port Canaveral, and November 10th out of Baltimore. And, Mike, you're coming on one.
I will be on the March 17th cruise out of Tampa. And so anybody who's interested in, like, a 3-6 horse or something should sign up because that's what I'll be doing.
Because that's where Mike and I will be pretty much camped all week.
And the rest of us will be in the adult games at the 4-8 horse table.
Oh, okay.
Whatever. 4-8's fine. I want to get action.
Yeah. And then finally, we're starting to get on the road again this year. I'm heading down to Palm Beach Kennel Club. Oh, it's like, that's what they say when you call the number. Remember you call the number? And they're like, hey, welcome to the Palm Beach Kennel Club. They had the track announcer do their voicemail for them, which I think is awesome. But I'll be playing the horse event at the World Series Poker Circuit event February 19th. Lots of people are headed down there. I think they're... we haven't talked about this on the show at all, but their first event, which I think is this weekend, early next week, $1 million guarantee on a $500 buy-in tournament.
Sweet.
First time ever.
It's got a few days and re-entries and stuff too, right?
Yeah. And they said they already had, I talked to the manager this week, and he said they had 1,000 already pre-registered for it.
Man. Hey, just make sure you try to hold up the Anti-Up name when you're playing that horse event, okay?
I got to finish 12th, right?
Yeah, you got to finish at least 12th.
12th, and then I'll be on the Hendon Mob with you two guys. and I'll send in my prettiest picture like Chris did.
Yes, they asked for it. All right, let's see what's happening on the Anti-Up News Desk.
The District of Columbia, which passed the nation's first internet gaming bill in 2010, has voted 12-2 this week to repeal the law. Council members and Mayor Vincent Gray expressed concern over how the law was passed, But at least some remain open to passing a new law if it is properly vetted.
You know, what I find funny about this is that I tweeted it too, was it's amazing how the people here can have something sneak past them that they voted in, but yet the UIGEA is still around. That cracks me up. Passed as attached to a port security bill at the stroke of midnight in the last session, that's okay to let that sneak by, but this snuck by them somehow, and now they can change it.
Yeah, but this is the DC City Council versus Congress, so yeah. I mean, they can't really wield that kind of power.
We should still, something should have been done about the UIGEA a long time ago.
But you're right, you know, you should start a little letter writing campaign to Congress, say, hey, look what the DC Council did. Don't you think you should do the same thing on the federal level?
See how easily they can do that?
Absolutely.
Well, in better news, an Iowa lawmaker is ready to reintroduce an internet gaming bill in that state. Lawmakers are proposing table games to be added to Maryland casinos, and Nevada continues to license additional companies to participate in online gaming when the federal government gives them the green light. Pretty exciting
stuff.
Yeah,
Nevada thing is the most interesting in this. I mean, you got dozens of companies that are licensed now.
Yeah.
To do nothing.
Yeah, to do nothing.
To sit around and wait. And I just wonder how long it's going to be before Nevada lawmakers go back and say, you know what, this part that we said had to be a federal law, let's just get rid of that.
Let's just change that. Harry Reid.
All right, finally, poker funny man Norman Shedd was let off with a warning and dismissed from the panel after he is cited for contempt of court for tweeting jokes during a trial when he was a juror in California burglary case.
Oh my God, that is great.
I tell you, the set on this guy. I mean, he's sitting there, and I think, you know, he was able to do it without people seeing it. He went to some great lengths to get his humor out there.
Isn't a set three?
Yeah, that's what I keep saying.
He could have. It's possible. I watched the Human Body channel. Some weird stuff that goes on there.
You guys are killing me.
But, it's easy for me to sit back here and laugh because I just know how Norman Shedd is, and he's a type that I think could not be on a jury without trying to make jokes, and you can't crack jokes to juror number 8 next to you. And this is his way of doing it. Wholly wrong, of course. And I don't know how you think you're not going to get caught.
He should have tweeted under the fake Norman Shedd.
I mean, what really killed him was the judge follows his Twitter account, I think.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm joking.
That's hilarious, though.
But yeah, seriously, how do you think you're not going to get out of this?
Okay, let's have a fresh new O'Malley's move put on the table today.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a $1, $2, no-limit hold'em home game. Everyone bought in for $100, and we're sitting at an 8-person table. The play is fairly scattered throughout, some extremely good, some really bad, and everywhere in between. The night is winding down as we sit with around $300, the second biggest stack at the table. We're under the gun, and we look down at the 2 of spades, 2 of hearts. As bad as this sounds, we're going to do a little min-raise here to $4. We do this for two reasons. One, it might send a signal to the table that we have a bigger hand than we do. And if we get raised, we can re-raise. And two, we want to build a pot for set mining purposes. Our image is tight aggressive, and we're getting the respect we've worked for. In fact, we got a few strange looks at our min-raise, and mixing things up is exactly what we want to do. We want to keep our opponents on their toes. We get exactly what we want. 6 callers, including the blinds, and a missed small blind. The pot is 25, and the flop is 7 of clubs, 3 of diamonds, 2 of diamonds. Precisely what we'd hoped for. The blinds check, and it comes to us. Normally, we'd want to protect against possible flush draws. But with 3 people left to act behind us, we're going to go ahead and check here with the intention of check raising, knowing that if it gets to the button checked, he'll make a move for the pot. And we watch as it goes check, check, and right on schedule, the player on the button reaches for chips and places $16 into the $24 pot, making it 40. This player is the best at the table, and can be a pretty tricky player. He has us covered in chips, and this is where our min-raise preflop is coming back to haunt us. You see, he missed his last two blind hands, and came back in to post the $3, buying the button. So he only had to call $2 more to win potentially $25 pre-flop. So he could have any two cards here. But at this point, there are only two hands that beat us, and we can't play scared. We planned to spring a trap, and we got a tasty morsel to walk right into it. Once the blinds fold, we triple his bet, making it 48, and enough to give him improper odds to make the call if he has a flush draw. 32 more to win 88 is enough to push out this savvy player with the flush draw and improper odds. Unless he calculates implied odds, but if another diamond comes that doesn't pair the board, he isn't getting another dime from us, and he has to know that. It's folded back around to him, and he thinks for a brief moment before pushing his stack into the middle. Wow! We didn't see that coming. So, is this a snap call? Easy fold? Or is there something to talk about here?
The crowning achievement for any poker player is to put a championship bracelet around their wrist. And the only company that you should trust to create it is Pro Poker Gear. Pro Poker Gear has created custom-designed bracelets and accessories for events from the United States Poker Championships and the WPT-APL. Featuring 24/7 service and their exclusive Turbo Builder, Pro Poker Gear will supply your poker event with an award everyone will be talking about. Visit ProPokerGear.com and get geared.
All right, well, we're gallivanting across the United States. We are forced to live vicariously through the bard himself, Mr. Mike Basso, when it comes to exotic foreign travel. We can't afford that kind of stuff.
No, we can't do that.
But the hot destination for poker these days is Macau, where casino companies are falling over themselves to build the next big resort. A few months ago, Basso crossed the other pond to the Far East and is here today to give us a trip report. All right, so let me get us started here, Mike. Of all the many things I was amazed at when you were telling me of your travels, and first of all, everybody that listens to the show and knows you before knows that you could spin one great yarn, so I was rolling when you're telling me all this anyhow. But for me, it was just how inexpensive it is to visit Macau, obviously airfare notwithstanding. So, you know, I'm a cheapskate at heart. The only person cheaper in the world is my co-host here, so we're both extremely interested and you telling us just how cheap it is to hang out in Macau.
Well, I was kind of surprised. I actually spent most of my time in Hong Kong. And Hong Kong, like Macau, is a special administrative unit of China. So although it's part of China, you need passport control to get in and out of both Hong Kong and Macau. So... in general, it's cheaper than I would say most big cities. You could get a decent hotel room in Hong Kong for somewhere around $100 a night. You could probably do a lot better. And the meals that I had in Hong Kong and just in the downtown area, in some of the small cafes and things, were very inexpensive. I had like a big lunch one day, and when I got the check, I was surprised that it was about $6.
Wow. General's so, chicken.
General's chicken. They leave out the. The other thing that was, if you like shopping, I'm not a big shopping person, but just wandering around the streets and looking at all the stalls of things like jade and jewelry and the crazy foods like the octopus jerky and the other awesome things that are for sale. It's very different, and it was quite an experience, eye-opening as far as the different culture. And in fact, if you think about Hong Kong as being a big metropolis, that's true. I spent actually, though, a day on one of the outer islands of Hong Kong, which is totally rural, no cars, and I did some hiking across the island, and it's a fishing village is the only place on the island. And so you can actually get away from it all, right? Like 5 or 15 minute ferry ride from Hong Kong proper. But I knew that since there's no gambling in Hong Kong, other than there's a horse track, which is a lot of fun, called the Happy Valley Race Course, which I did go to. I plunged my lungs out there and made some big bets and came home a little bit of a loser, but you know, it was fun to watch. It's night racing right in the middle of the downtown Hong Kong.
Now, did you use the program, or did you just pick a random number?
Well, I went over when they led the horses.
Seems
around.
To be some debate on the show of the best way to pick the winner.
I basically, the way I've always bet, and I'm not a very winning bettor on horses, but I always bet on based on odds, the tote board.
And I like mistake.
My sweet spot is right around a 9-2 horse, or a, you know, 4-1, 5-1, somewhere in there. I like to bet a horse in that range, and but there's no poker in Hong Kong. Unless, you know, there's probably some underground games going on, but I wasn't invited. So I had to get on to a boat, a hydrofoil, to go, I think it's about 45 minutes by high-speed hydrofoil to get from Hong Kong to Macau. Now, I had been told that in Macau, the players were very nitty and snug. But what I saw was naked aggression and people going over the top. And that was in the arrivals hall. They have these shotguns. Like, this is like you and me trying to cross into Canada. And I would have loved to put you in this situation. It's one of these places where there's this big hall and people are waiting to get onto the boat. And there are no lines. There are like vague lines here that snake into other lines that are kind of off to the side. And people are trying to cut. I mean, it was just jam-packed with people trying to get to Macau. And we had one guy, we had like a situation where a guy tried to cut in line. And the ruckus that was raised. And, you know, the little old lady with the sign, with the tour group, with holding up the sign and with the rolled-up umbrella, started whacking people back with the umbrella. I'm just watching all this stuff. But anyway, it was quite entertaining to get over there. And then once you get there, you get out at the port in Macau, and there's a line of minibuses right there, each one with a casino's name on the side. So you really don't even have to get a cab or anything. You just jump in one of these buses, and where I went and I spent the whole day was at the Grand Lisboa Macau. And it's a multi-story casino, and I kept going up the escalators higher and higher, like floor after floor, until I finally got to the poker room, which is on the very top. Ooh. And it's a PokerStars affiliated poker room. So after a little bit of a wait on the list, I was put right into the 10-20 game.
10-20 yuan or 10-20
yen?
What exactly was that 10-20? What does that translate to?
10-20 no limit.
But what does it translate to for you?
He's trying to be humorous. I know, and you're ruining it.
No, I'm trying to make it out like I played 10-20. it's Hong Kong dollars, and 10-20 works out to be about $1.53 on the blinds.
Wow.
Wow. What do you mean, wow? Is that high?
No, just the trans, you know, it's just wild.
So, like, great. So he can tell people, oh, yeah, you know, I regularly play 10-20 no limit.
Yeah, right.
No one's ever going to ask him, you know, whether it's Zimbabwe dollars.
Yeah, but we could say that here, too, if you're playing online, just say 10-20, which you mean 10 cent, 20 cent.
Yeah, absolutely, that's true. Very true.
So what were the players like? Because, you know, I mean, obviously we hear over here, when we're here, they always say Asian players, a lot of them will typically buy in light and shove on draws and be kind of aggressive. And what were they like over there?
Well, that was the surprise to me. It was a very snug table, at least my table. Very tight, very conservative players. I had one situation where I had two low clubs and I was in one of the blinds and I made the flush on the river, and I shoved because the pot by that time had gotten fairly large. And I don't think I shoved more than about $30 into a you know, I was short stacked. So it was like a $100 pot, and I think I shoved 30 into it. And a guy with, I think, like the second nut flush and on an unpaired board took like 3 minutes to call me for $30 to win 130.
Wow. He was probably reading the horse program and not paying attention.
And when he did call, he was shocked that I didn't have the ace-high flush. I mean, he was so happy to win that pot. He had no clue that he was going to win that pot. He thought he was just throwing his money away.
So you managed to find the one type poker game in all of China.
Well, you would. I think there's a stereotype about Asian players in the States that they tend to be loose and aggressive. I'm not sure that is true in China itself. And of course, I'm basing this on about 10 hours of play with 7 or 8 people.
That's a sufficient sample size from polling these days.
It was, what I loved about it was, it was one of those situations where when you raise to 30, and some people even were raising to 25 on a 10-20. I'm sorry, when you raised to 50, you got heads up. Mm. I mean, there wasn't a lot of limping, and there was a lot of respect for the pre-flop raise. So it played standard. I mean, you could do what you're supposed to do. You make your C bet. People fold. It was not a lot of pyrotechnics or anything. I mean, and I love the fact that there's nothing I hate more than either a limpy table or a table where when you raise you get 7 callers. I mean, and I've run into both of those at tables here in different rooms, and this was a lot more by the book, I would say.
Hey, let me ask you, what was the language spoken at the table?
Well, I demanded that they speak English.
And you were the tallest guy at the table, so.
They spoke, I'm assuming it was Cantonese, but anytime I had a question about what had been done or how much or this or that, most of the players could speak English. The dealers could speak enough English to tell me what was going on. Most of the time it was obvious what was going on, but if somebody raised at the other end of the table and I couldn't see how much it was, the dealer was very quick to put it into English. And actually, being cheap, Scott, you would like this too. There was no tipping on pots won.
Wow.
In Macau.
And Chris would prefer that better.
There was
free water?
There was no tipping on drinks.
Yeah.
The drinks came, nobody tipped, and the dealers never were tipped for pots. So I love that.
So let me ask you then, when you wanted to raise, if you were to say something, was there what was the Chinese word for raise, or did you just give the thumbs up sign, or did you just put the money out there you wanted to raise with? I mean, how did call, fold, what were the words that you used?
I didn't really have to use much in terms of talking. It kind of reminded me.
You speak the international language.
Yeah. Well, Chris is right. You know, if I was putting out some chips to raise, I generally would give a thumbs up signal before I put the chips in front of me, you know, to show that it was going to be a raise. Sometimes I would just, you know, throw the chips out so they'd spread out and everyone could see it was a raise.
Right.
I never really had to say much at all. And it's funny, everywhere I've been, which is in a lot of places as far as poker goes, the play has been a lot more conservative than here. And like, for example, in Amsterdam, there were no limit games. The only thing they played in the casino I went to in Amsterdam was limit hold'em.
Awesome.
And that was a very by the book game too. I mean, and so I guess I should move overseas to get the kind of games I want. These are the kind of games I like, and it was a lot of fun. And the interactions I had with the other players were not that much in Macau, but you know, you get those things where you smile at somebody and you compliment them on their hand, or you do this or that. I mean, it's I didn't run into any hoodied college kids or anything like that.
Anybody take their shirt off to get a massage? At least at the table there.
They didn't have table side massages there, but there were plenty of massages to be had in Hong Kong.
Were you the only foreign player?
I saw another guy who was probably Australian. There were a lot of Aussies in Hong Kong, and
I'd imagine
a few in Macau. So really, there was just me and this other guy. Everyone else was Asian that I saw there. And you know, as I say, it was no trouble getting communicating, because poker is the international language. I mean, if you put out a stack of chips, that pretty much speaks in any language.
Now, this was the only poker room that you visited there. Were there other rooms? How many rooms of poker were there? Do you know?
Well, I know that Macau is one of the most booming of gambling spots on the globe, and in fact, they've dredged up a new island that they've made that is almost completely casinos, and a new causeway goes over there, and you know, there's a Wynn there.
Right.
There are other casinos going up. The amount of money that sloshes through Macau is just, it would blow your mind, I'm sure. But I only went to the Grand Lisboa, and the reason is probably because I got stuck a little at the early stages of this trip.
Right.
And so you know how I am. If I get stuck, I'm going to stay there until I get unstuck. And so I almost got unstuck, but I spent the whole time in the Grand Lisboa, which is in the older part of Macau. And in fact, they had the Grand Prix of Macau was going on at the same time, so that was kind of interesting too.
Was it just hold'em, or did they spread other kinds of games? And also, obviously, you played 10/20. Was there like 5,000, 1,000, or 3,000, or whatever the hell? I mean, what kind of limits were out there?
There was a higher game. I think there was like a 50, a 100 game, or a 25/50 or something like that. When I went there, it was early in the day, and they had like three tables going, and two of the three were my limit, which amounts to like 1/3 here, and then I think there was a higher limit, which may have been like 25/50, which would have been, 2/5, yeah, the equivalent of a 2/5 game. So, you know, there weren't a lot of high rollers, but of course this was during the week and it was during the day, so I'm sure it's a big room, it's very nice, good service, and the dealers were excellent. And I also like that I don't know why I like this, but they take the rake out after the pot is over, and they chop up the pot that way rather than all the way along. I just tend to – that's neater to me, and it makes sure there's no mistake, or it seems like it would mean less mistakes than people dragging from it as the pot builds.
And it was just hold'em that you saw? There was no
– yeah, just hold'em. I'm not sure if there are games at the Wynn of other types, but it seemed like it was pretty much of a hold'em atmosphere the whole place.
Did they call the first card on the flop a door card or a window card there? all right. Well, you mentioned that you went to the horse track and spent most of your time in Hong Kong. I mean, if folks are going making a trip to Macau, are they going to be able to do anything but gamble? Is there other stuff for them to do?
Well, I think the thing about Macau is that it's it's so close to Hong Kong that, let's say, what I did was spend most of my time in Hong Kong and then made a day trip to Macau. If you wanted to do that, you could do it, you know, let's say you were in Hong Kong for a week or 10 days, you could make two or three trips over to Macau to gamble. That's the way I'd do it. If you want to just hardcore gamble the whole time, then stay in Macau. But you could make a real trip of it by making several trips over to Macau. It's very easy. It costs about $20 for the hydrofoil that goes over there. You do have to go through the arrivals terminal, which is a bit of an adventure. But
are you allowed to laugh at the border agents, or do your friends yell at you for that?
Well, they asked me what I was going to do there, and I said, visiting. No, they were very nice to me there, and it's I would definitely, if you're going to Macau to gamble, I would definitely go to Hong Kong too, because it's quite an experience in Hong Kong. It's one of the world's great cities, and yet at the same time you've got rural areas that are a lot of fun too, and all kinds of stuff to do.
Well, not that what you've said so far isn't hilarious, but did you meet any funny characters over there? Do you have any funny stories that you want to share?
Well, I think... let me think.
Okay, that's a no. So moving on to the next question.
Well, the guy who was trying to sell me the octopus jerky was very insistent, and I eventually did get some. But
did he work for Jack's Lynx?
Yeah. Instead of the Sasquatch, they got this like huge 47 tentacled octopus that rumored to have existed.
I tell you though, the food markets there, I mean, when you have this type of stuff that is put into people's mouths over there, will just blow your mind. In the fish market, the fish are cut up with the head still on and the hearts are still beating as they fillet them. It's like a horror movie in there. It's really wild.
Did you eat chicken feet?
No. I did have squid balls.
Awesome.
Now, when you say squid balls, do you mean like the squid is bald, or do you mean squid's balls?
It was weird at the breakfast buffet at the hotel I was at. They had like half of it.
Like a demon.
Half of it was normal breakfast stuff, and then the other half of it was squid balls, duck sausage, dumplings. I mean, it was bizarre.
Now, when you say duck sausage,
oh my gosh!
No, I tell you, those squid balls are delicious. They are just delicious. Very mild.
I still don't know the answer to that question.
Not strong. I think, you know, they just take the squid and they use a melon scooper. I think
okay.
That's what it is.
That's okay. That's a lot better.
All right, Mike. What's on tap for your 2012 travels, aside from, of course, the March Antioch Poker Cruise, which, you know, hey, if people want to come play with you and duck cards, this is your opportunity, because you're not going to make it on another one this year, I don't think.
No, I will be going on the Antioch Cruise in March, and I'll be going to Europe in May, probably spending most of my time in Vienna. So I'm just wondering, are there any card rooms in Vienna? I'll have to look into that before I go.
Oh, they probably have sausage there, though.
There aren't a lot of places you haven't played. I mean, you might be looking to go to the International Space Station pretty soon to find a new venue.
I was thinking
the moon base.
I called Scott in 2003 from the Aviation Club in Paris. I don't know if he remembers this.
I do, absolutely.
I walked into the Aviation Club, and this will show you how long ago this was. I couldn't sit in on any of the games because they were playing mixed Hold'em Omaha, and I did not know how to play Omaha at that time. In fact, I still don't know how to play Omaha. At least I know the rules now. That goes... as far back as I go, as far as international trips. I guess the Aviation Club is still around. I'd like to go back there now that I know how to play Omaha.
We'll take your bomber jacket.
Well, you know, we always appreciate when you come on the show. We're sad that it took this long for you to come back. We know you had some issues with us. We had to work through some contracts and everything. But, you know, we're glad we had enough red M&Ms to make you happy and have you come on the show. But are you going to stick around for our Hand of the Week?
I'll give it a shot.
All right, let's do that.
This is Joe Seabock, and you're listening to Any Up.
All right, we know Fast is a little rusty, so we're going to do a situation of the week here. So it's not that complicated for him. It comes from Mark Reed, one of our new friends. First, he says, the show was great.
Awesome.
That's it. We're done. Thanks. That's it.
Thank you very much. Good night.
And look at this. He actually says, I have a hand I would like your panel to discuss on the show. So we actually assembled a panel specifically for Mark here. Otherwise, it's just you and me yapping about it. He was playing 1-2 No Limit Hold'em and had $150 in front of him. I assume that's U.S., not the one. Stacks the table range from 100 to 400. He wakes up in the cutoff. I hate when I fall asleep at the table. Wakes up in the cutoff with two black aces. Limps to him. He raises to $12. Gets five colors. Now, by the way, this is a situation, so I'm going to read the whole thing, and then we'll dissect it, all right? All right, the flop is 8-8-9, two hearts. It checks to the pudgy young desperado to my right, and he makes a pot-sized bet. He's wearing a cheap hoodie and has been texting on an old cell phone. This is valuable observation skills here. He has 250 in front of him, and it looks like that amount is meaningful to him. He appears to be excited by the flop. I believe he would make an aggressive bet on a paired flop with a wide range, and after playing longer with him, that appears to be his preference. If it were just the two of us, I would have shoved, but since there are four players behind me, there's a chance I'm drawing dead. A slow-played eight could be out, and there's a possibility that the other two aces could be out. The table has been loose and straight. It has been loose, and straight and flush draws and over pairs are real calling possibilities. Since I'm only in for $12, I fold, as does the rest of the table. Should I have called, shipped, or folded?
Well, there's another option, too. You don't have to just ship. I mean, it could raise, too. I'm just saying. I'll let Mike go first.
Chris, am I wrong? Does folding seem to be an odd choice here?
Yeah, it's a really odd choice to me. I mean, unless you've got a perfect read on this guy and you know you have to hit one of two outs or reads on guys behind you, to me, a fold, wow, that's way too nitty. I mean, that's the way Mike Fassel likes you to play. But
I don't even think I'm that nitty.
You know, that is pretty nitty. I mean, I controlled the pot to start. I'm the one that raised. And let's just get back to that, too, for a second there. I don't think $12 is enough in a 1-2 game when you have limpers. It doesn't say how many limpers, though. It says it limps to me. So I'm not sure how many limps that is. But if you have, like, two or three guys limping before you, you got to make it a lot more than 12 to get that field thinned. I mean, that's just not enough. If three guys limp to you, you know what I mean, you got blinds in there, too, that's $9 in the pot already. If you just make it 12, you know, a guy who has two out there, all he has to call 10, and you got three other guys you know are going to call once they call, I mean, that's just $12 raise is not enough. I'd have been a lot more bold after the flop had I made it 20 to go and gotten a few callers. But in this case, you know, a guy could have anything, but why would he bet into you if you were the preflop raiser and he had an 8? You know, why wouldn't he just wait? I mean, some people think like that. They think on that level where they know if you can't let go of your aces and he's convinced you had aces, he might bet into you thinking that you might come over the top and then get all your stack. But it doesn't feel like that's the type of player this guy was to me.
My instinct would be, along with what you said, Chris, is when he leads out on the flop, my instinct is going to be to raise.
Yeah.
I don't think I need to shove right there, but I would definitely...
All right, well, let's talk about this, because maybe I'm obviously not good with the maths, but we raised to 12, we get five callers, so that's $60 in the pot, right?
Right.
This guy makes a pot size bet, so that's 60, so it's 120 in the pot now, and we started with 150 in front of us, so we're down to, what, 138. So to raise him...
I guess it is a shove, then.
Yeah.
We need to raise to 120, right?
I didn't know how much we had to start the hand.
Which leaves us about boss fare left, or, you know, a general's Happy Meal in Macau.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think the raising is a possibility here. I think you got to ship it.
Yeah, I was forgetting that he had 150. I was thinking he was the one that had 250 as well. I forgot that he had 150. So, yeah, and I take back my snarky comment. I guess it is just call, ship, or fold. Yeah, I would have shipped. I guess there's a reason to call, but with so many people in the hand who could have look how wet that board is. You know, anybody with Jack 10's got open ended. Anybody with two hearts got a flush draw. Anybody with an 8 is beating you. So There's a chance to call here, but if you did call, you're giving everybody else, you know, great odds to hit their flush. I think I'm shoving.
Yeah, I mean, using our hand of the week template from last week, this is where we say raise or fold, don't call. But it's true, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't call here.
I mean, you're right. There's just too many things. I mean, you gotta make it way too expensive for any other draws to get you, and or you just get out. I mean, I really, when he first said this to me, I wrote it back, and my quote is, I think I'm a tight player, but I think this fold was too tight for me with the little smiley face. And I think it's probably right, but I mean, I guess here's the thing, is you're talking about a difference between committing $12 to this pot or committing $150 to this pot. That's a big range.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't fold. And if I call, it's a terrible play because you're inviting three other guys to hit their draws or whatever. I just didn't believe this guy had an eight. And if he didn't have an eight, then I think I still have the best hand. There's no way to know, but if you just call and two will call along behind you, what have you learned? You've learned nothing. Now you're going into turn dodging half the deck if you're ahead right now.
And you're going to end up having to put in the extra 60 or whatever it is anyway.
Yeah, because now you're down to 90, so and the pot's huge. If you get a caller or two behind you, that someone's going to bet at least 90 anyway. So the call, this doesn't work for me.
All right, so let me ask a little bit about, he obviously went to in great detail on her opponent, the pudgy young desperado, with the cheap hoodie and texting on the old cell phone. And we've all seen those, of course, haven't we? the most telling part was he has 250 in front of him, and it looks like that amount is meaningful to him, which obviously I think is what played into our hero's desire to fold, is because if it money is that meaningful to him, you're not going to put $60 here on a draw or just try to take a pot down with five people in it, are you?
No, but I just have to wonder if he had an eight, would he really? I mean, I guess he might bet that much just because it's so coordinated. He might want to get the draws out of there. So he could have an eight. I mean, it's possible. It's possible he has an eight.
I mean, I think it's really kind of a gut check thing here, too, because, I mean, my initial thought when reading it is, you know, hey, if you got aces, you're planning to flop an ace or get a paired board, generally, right?
I'm looking for a queen, seven, deuce, rainbow.
Okay, or a completely dry board, all right. But, I mean, you're not normally scared of a paired board with aces, are you?
Probably not. But this board is so coordinated. I hearken back to our Times days, way, way, way back when we were in our second location, not even in the studio yet, when we reviewed the TJ Cloutier video game.
Yes, yes.
And he talks about having pocket aces, and the board comes, and I think I can't recall properly, but I think he says something to the effect of Queen Jack 10 with two suits or three suits. And he said, and the guy bets into you, what do you do? And then if you pick, like, raise, he laughs at you and he says, well, are you kidding me? this is a coordinated board and whatever he says. So maybe a fold is brilliant. I don't know. Maybe a fold is brilliant. But it just seems so tight to me. But you're right, though, that if it's not a fold, then it can't be a call because you're calling off more than – you're basically calling off – what, 60 out of 150, plus you put 12 out there, so...
Yeah, with an overpair.
Yeah, you're calling off more than half your stack with
an
overpair.
And you don't know these other people in the hand, how many more are coming along. I don't know where we are right here. he bets, what do you say, did anybody fold? No, so four players behind us.
Yeah.
Well, that can't be right, three players. Because
no, three. That's crazy.
Or no, five callers, that's right, yeah, it's four players behind you. So, I mean, we're sitting here saying it like it's automatic that if we shove, everybody else is going to fold because no one's going to be able to call. But I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's the case either. I know if I have...
We're risking our stack with an overpair against maybe two hands, maybe three, maybe more, depending on how crazy this table is. $12, I got another hand coming.
I see Scott's point, and I've been in this, not this exact situation, but similar situations where I've in like a 1-1 game, and I've raised pre-flop with aces, and the board comes out with two of one suit and like two or three straight cards, you know, like Jack 10, 7 or something with two hearts, and it's someone bets and another person raises, and it gets to me, and I mean, it's just an obvious fold of the aces. I mean, you can't always say that you're going to take aces all the way to the river every hand. You just can't do that.
No, no, of course not. I mean, and we've all been there where we just had to muck them because you knew you were beat. But in this case, it's just so weird. It's such a weird situation.
I usually don't think of a paired board as something that's a wet board. I mean, I think of it as, you know, now obviously there's hearts and straights out there, so that's different. But generally, a paired board, I'm not going to be afraid of the flopped trips every single time. You just can't think that someone has got that eight. Now, that's if you're heads up. Now, obviously, you got five people in the hand. The chances of one of those five people holding an eight is a lot better than if you're just heads up with a guy. So, I mean, maybe he was right to play. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, if you go through the range of hands of people who would call a $12 raise in a 1-2 game,
ace eight is definitely in there.
Ace eight's in there. I mean, even 8-9 is in there, to be honest with you. But 9-9 is definitely in there. Yeah. You know, 9-9 is definitely in there. 9-10 suited is in there.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you're on the button.
What about his larger point too? I mean, the other two aces very well could be out.
Right. Right. So you'd be drawn dead.
So I mean, not necessarily depends on whatever else whether they're drawing dead, but I mean you. Two real important cards for you are very likely could be gone. I mean, you see this in Omaha a lot. If I'm in an Omaha game with five callers and I got two aces in my hand, I know there's not going to be an ace coming on that board.
Right.
Now, this is different. Obviously, no limit holding them. But, I mean, sure. I mean, in this game, maybe even at $12, people will play ace deuce, ace six.
Yeah.
So those two aces very well could be out, as he said.
Yeah. Yeah, this is not as easy or cut and dried as it. It started to sound like, cause I forgot he had 150. I was thinking he had 250 or more.
You're thinking of the pudgy young desperate.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was saying when
cheap putting and texting on the old cell phone.
I think it would have been easier to fold if someone had bet and then he had had a caller in front of him.
Right.
Then it would have been an easy fold, I think. Let's say, you know, someone bets 60 and you get one caller, and then it gets to you and you're sitting there with two aces. I think that's a lot easier to give it up there than you've got this guy in a hoodie bets, and it's now on you, and you've got to wonder what the people behind you have. That's a shove or fold type situation, I think.
Right, and if it's a flop game, ace-ace-five, then we'd be in the same better situation, too. You can't go that way, Mike. You can't try to live in the perfect world. We got to deal with what's at hand here. Don't be results-oriented.
No, that's not results-oriented.
No, I know.
That's just saying, if you tweak the situation a little bit, you'd have a different outcome. I mean, it's easier to fold. And I'm saying that those other situations, like the one I described as being the tweaked situation, do come up.
Yeah.
And in that situation, you better be ready to release the aces, I would think.
All right, let me ask you, if you were, we have these four callers behind us that we're worried about. What if it's folded around to us and we're the last one to act with this bit? Do we feel better or worse?
So in other words,
we're saying the callers left to act after us, we're scared about. But if they've already folded their hands,
and we're closing
the
action
against this guy,
hell, then you might even just call.
Yeah, and see what he does in a turn. Yeah, I need to get a cough button. I don't have.
You need to get a cough drop.
A cough drop, yeah. Well, let's wrap this up, because I'm going to cough like hell in a minute. So.
All right, well, would we ever decide there? I think you talked me into a fold, so...
Yeah, it's a fold seems like a pretty good idea now, but...
It seemed like a horrible idea at the beginning, but we talked ourselves into it.
Yeah. Of course, I'm a donk, so I would have shoved, though.
Yeah. Well, it would have been interesting to see what that would have happened.
So he didn't. We don't know what happened, though.
Everybody folded.
Oh, everybody folded. That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Sorry. Yeah. So it'll remain in our mysteries of the world, like who shot Kennedy.
There's no mystery to that. Hey, Mike. Thanks for coming on today.
Hey, we got to give Mark his swag here first.
I know, but I'm still thanking Mike for being on here and shouldering some of the burden of situation of the week.
That much. I mean,
he shouldered some of that burden for me.
There's a game that your listeners can play with my appearance that they can go back and replay this whole podcast and try to figure out the instance of the time when I was in the bathroom. Because there was a bathroom break, but there was no stoppage of the tape. I am.
You know what they should do, too, is they should re-listen to the show as a drinking game. And every time I cough, take a shot. And someone else, every time Mike talked and the microphone popped in our ears, we'll see who gets more drunk. All right, give away the swag, Scott.
All right, Mark, we appreciate you sending the hand of the weekend. Everybody else, send your hands of the week to podcast@anyupmagazine.com, and we'll send you great, we're going to send Mark a grinder bracelet from Pro Poker Gear, which sells much more than terrific bracelets for home games or leagues, including hats, T-shirts, and gifts in the AnnieUp store at AnnieUpStore.com.
Was it a show?
Now we can thank Mike.
Well, now I can thank him whenever I damn well please. But I do appreciate you coming on, Mike, and you should come back more often.
Well, it's a pleasure. Maybe after the cruise we can do a roundup and let everybody know how well I did on the cruise.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Locke.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
You're not getting any muddiness or anything.
No, you're way clearer than Scott is.
Mother was a mutter. My father was a mutter. Yeah, I was in the middle of an interview last night, and I was like gasping and sneezing and crap, and then I ran out of tissues in the middle of it.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't get up. I had the cat sitting on both of my legs, so I couldn't move. Oh, it was just the most brutal 10 minutes.
Well, you could move. You tell the wretched beasts to get off and then go.
No, you can't do that. They're not like turtles, man. They got claws and shit.
Jeez.
Wow, there's a lot of shit on here.
Always is, man.
Every week.
High quality shit, though. Yeah, fast to quit listening to the show back when it used to be a half an hour. Now it's like 2 hours a week.
So you guys think the poker boom is gonna... Oh, never mind.